The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are not necessarily representative of the Coalition or of any other entity. This content is intended for mature audiences only.
What's going on, people? Welcome to Throw Down Your Questions, episode 145. I'm your host, Tony Polanco, and I'm joined by Chris Seeley.
Hey, what's up, everyone?
Carlos Romero.
What up?
Brian Majoma.
Yo, what's good, people?
Brett Murdoch.
Oh, hello, I didn't see you come in.
And Adam Vail.
Next up, 71st Continental.
You know? Yo, so Manny will be here with us eventually. I think he said he went to a friend's, like, you know, house to have dinner, but traffic is all fucked up. So no fancy intro, you know, for all you guys watching us live. And also, and I'm going to start getting into the habit of this right now. Because people don't listen to the whole fucking show, obviously. If you want to ask us questions for next week's show, leave them in the comment section after the show finishes. For you guys watching us live, start dropping them now. Again, got to get into the habit of that because we've been doing this version of Throwdown. Actually, we've been doing Throwdown Your Questions for 3 years. Motherfuckers still don't know where to leave questions. I'm like, we say it all the time, but not everybody watches till the end, you know? So I'll throw it up at the beginning. So excuse me if I sound too shilly about that shit, you know? But again, every week, yo, would I leave questions? Would I leave the question? I'm like, ah! You know, it's like, come on, man, the same fucking place. We always leave them, you know? Anyway, let's get into it, man. So I moved this question up to the front of the queue, as the British would say, because I want to get the fanboys riled up a little bit. So this one comes from my man, Grimrook, Chris's favorite commentator. and he asks, can the Xbox One really be called a success if Microsoft has never turned a profit from it? So he's asking the question because over on NeoGAF, a tech journalist and Microsoft insider called Paul Thurrott, I think that's his name, revealed that Microsoft hasn't made a profit off the Xbox division. Ain't that about it, bitch?
They made a profit, maybe not this version, but I mean, they made a profit through 360.
So yeah, Xbox, but I think they're specifically talking about. I think they're specifically talking about the Xbox One, you know,
generation.
Now, hold on. Yeah. Let's make the distinction here. The Xbox itself or the division?
The Xbox division. The Xbox division.
That is way more important.
Yeah.
Like if they as an arm of a company are not making money. So they've just been in the red for how long?
Yeah, if you guys will indulge me, let me read this whole quote from this guy. He goes, one of the dirty little secrets of Microsoft's Xbox/gaming business is that it has never actually turned a profit. So I was curious to hear Mr. Nadella utter these contorted words last night. Quote, our gaming business is not more than $9 billion and growing profitably. So $9 billion is revenues, not profits. So growing means that revenues are growing, and growing profitability means what? The business is, quote unquote, becoming profitable, or is it just growing revenues positively? Was this a misstatement? What does this mean? Here's my guess. He means usage and engagement are growing, because I can state this with certainty. Microsoft's gaming business is not profitable. In fact, it's undergoing a digital transformation of its own. Very interesting shit right there, man.
Here's my first question that I got to ask on this. Where is all of their Xbox Live money going, then? Because it's not being like, I know that they're not necessarily turning a profit based on first-party studio games, and that's fine. That's never been their strategy. But so they're not sinking money into that, and they're not turning a profit from it. So they're definitely making money from Xbox Live. I'm guessing substantially more so than is required to actually, you know, keep the servers up. So where would all that money be going?
What do you mean, so the profits?
Yeah, I mean, like, there's probably very little overhead for actual Xbox, the content they provide for Xbox Live, and it goes for, you know, PS, you know, the PlayStation version as well. Like, we're all paying for access to internet and access to servers that don't cost nearly that much money for upkeep. So, my first question would be like, okay, so let's say, you know, do we know how many Xboxes are in the wild?
Roughly 30 million. Again, Microsoft's not giving out
exact numbers. I mean, if they count the 360s, if we're all on Xbox Live, if we're talking about like live subscriptions, is that still counts, you know?
So let's say 40 to be completely conservative. 40 million.
40 million. Yeah, you're giving it a lot more credit, man. Xbox.
No, I think there's even more than
between,
that.
Between Xbox this generation and last generation, that are still active.
Then would have to be more than that.
You know? No, I know. That's what I'm saying. Being really conservative, like we have 40 million. Yeah. 40 million Xboxes that are still working and plugged into the Ethernet. All right. Now let's say roughly half of them. Again, being really conservative. Roughly half of them subscribe to Xbox Live. So that's 20 million people a month that are paying what? $7, $8, $6?
Isn't it like 60 a year or something like that?
60 a year.
So yeah, let's say five. Yeah. All right.
And then think of how many, how much does Xbox get off of every digital order, purchase? They probably get at least a dollar or something. They got to get something from that.
Yeah, but even being minimal here, so like even if there's 20 million active Xbox Live accounts, that's $100 million a year. Where are they spending $100 million a year? Because I don't think that it would, you know, cost that much to keep the servers for Xbox Live up and running. I'm sure that they sink some of it back into advertisement and that kind of thing, but we could be looking at essentially them sinking the money back into advertising and things like that in order to intentionally not post much of a profit. I know lots of companies that do that, you know, for tax purposes. So this could essentially be Microsoft kind of sheltering some of their tax money. I don't know. Somebody else with more information could chime in here. I'm just saying that right off the bat, something about these numbers sounds a little bit weird because you know that they're drawing in money. So even if they're taking a loss on each system and they're not producing first party games, they're still making millions of dollars of income.
I still question how much of a loss, because I mean, think about it. At first I was like, damn, they have to be hurting. But then we got the S and then we got the X. And it's like almost back to back. So it's like, shit. Where are you getting all the money to create all these consoles then?
Well, they're sinking all the profits back into it, is what I'm thinking.
Well, I mean, the thing is that the S is...
Oh, sure, man, you sound like a robot.
Okay. Robot Manny's back.
He's in a cap.
But
he's
welcome. All right. Actually, Chris, I want you to jump on this because you're pretty good with numbers and shit. Because you talk about this sort of stuff with Nintendo, and I want you to analyze it from the Microsoft side.
Well, the thing with Microsoft is it's a huge company. So even when one arm is failing, right, you can always take money from another arm. So think about Windows Enterprise brings in like 20 to 50 times more money than Xbox, so even 100 times. Like, and the support for it, it brings a ton of money. So if they need to prop up Xbox, you prop it up with that money. Now, I didn't look at the financials, so I don't know, but I'll read into it and look for it next time. But Microsoft's a huge company and they make so many different things. But yeah, the profits from Xbox Live, like you'd say, would have to go back into support and maintenance, upkeep, you know, upgrades, R&D, all that stuff. Like, it has to cycle back into the thing. So when the system itself doesn't turn a profit, they need other ways to generate revenue from it. Xbox Live being the main way to generate revenue in the Xbox division, also off of their games, right? So with the hardware not turning a profit, obviously that's not that much of a disaster. It's not that bad, but you streamline the manufacturing process. That's why you see consoles go through so many revisions, and they'll even do silent revisions. They won't tell you when they change a board or a chip or switch manufacturers or find some lower voltage way of doing things so they can cut manufacturing costs so they eventually it does turn a profit, you know? So it's not unusual to say like, oh, the Xbox console's not turning a profit. Well, some guys push out systems at a loss, you know, per system, because the manufacturing costs are just so high. But then on the long run, it will eventually get cheaper to manufacture, cheaper to build, and they'll be able to turn a profit in other ways.
And nice. I mean, as I was going to say before, with the S, you know, all of that stuff is old tech that's gotten cheaper to manufacture. So if anything, the one that even the you know, with the X, I feel like even though they are using some pretty high-tech stuff in there, I still think it kind of equals itself out because of the cost that they're going with. And essentially, it's a $500 console. I don't think they're operating at a loss on that.
Yeah, but I still find it interesting that apparently they haven't made a profit, you know?
Well, I mean, it could just be that they're going in, whatever's going in is, you know, it's just they're just either breaking even or anything like that. So,
yeah, you know, I'd have to look at their financials, because are we just looking at the system itself or everything under Xbox?
Right? Yeah, that's a good question. Exactly. So, you know what? We'll come back to this on Thursday, because this is an interesting topic, you know?
Quick note.
Yeah.
If things were as bad as people are making it seem, why would they start R&D and development of a new console mid-tier? So it just doesn't make sense.
But do you think them not making a profit means that things are disastrous? Couldn't they just be like, you know, middle or something like that? You know what I mean?
Well, it'll be disastrous to them because they live off of making profits.
Yeah. I mean, as a business, obviously you want to make a profit, but if they're not losing, I don't know. It is a good question, though.
There was when they wrote their book, or was it the documentary? It was something I remember I saw when they talked about how they lost so much money with the first Xbox, the OG.
Yeah.
And then they were like, you know what? We know our mistakes. We know what we need to do. Then they made the 360, and then they talked about how it turned a profit. They didn't even talk about the recalls and stuff, but they talked about how successful it was and how it was able to generate a profit, and that was a big deal for the company because for a long time, the higher-ups did not want the Xbox to come out. They did not want a gaming division.
Yeah, Bill Gates didn't want that shit.
Yeah, he didn't want it, you know? So they were like, there's no point for this, you know? And so they had to prove that it can generate income, so revenue. So then, I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. All right, man. Let's move on to the next question. I moved this up to the, you know, next one because I want to talk about this. This started happening over the weekend and very interesting. Very interesting indeed. All right. So Apex, the guy's always changing his name, Mr. Mark. So he goes, could rapid pack math help close the gap in power between the PS4 Pro and Xbox One X if used properly? Or is it too early to tell? Now, for you who don't know, basically over the weekend, The funny thing is, we talked about this before. Mark Cerny was saying that, you know, you could kind of have the PlayStation 4 Pro output at like 8 teraflops because of some double point bullshit. I don't know the fucking tech terms. I'm going to have the tech guys talk about it soon. But basically, this thing has reared up again. But now the process is basically called rapid pack math. The Vegas, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, are going to have this in the fall, and apparently Sony's, you know, whatever's in the Sony system is able to do this to some extent. So now, I'm just going to be honest, the PlayStation fanboys are getting giddy about this. Like, oh shit, this thing's going to close the gap. It's going to destroy Xbox One X. And I'm like, haven't we heard this story before on the other side?
So PlayStation has a secret sauce?
It has secret sauce. It has secret sauce.
You know what? The thing is that, okay, whenever Mark Cerny or any of these people mention these sorts of things, they're always talking about the potential of doing these things. They're never actually saying that these things will actually be implemented. So again, I think it's another situation where it's just like, it has that potential. It can do this stuff, but will developers take it? Take that chance. I don't think so.
That's what I'm saying. We said that about the Xbox One X. Okay, the system has more power in it. Most developers won't utilize that power because it doesn't really benefit them, you know? So I think if this thing has this kind of juice in it, this sauce in it, no one's really going to be taking advantage of it.
The only people that are going to really take advantage of this, this rapid unpacking is probably the company within Sony Studios.
Apparently Wolfenstein is going to utilize this, but Wolfenstein and another game are utilizing it.
Bethesda or Ubisoft started utilizing it, but you have to specifically code for using half floats so that you have smaller data sets, but they can run faster. So you have to specifically code your engines and whatnot to utilize this thing, or otherwise it's useless.
Yeah. Carlos, I know you have some thoughts, man, so go ahead.
Yeah, man, this is like completely secret sauce stuff. Like, you can do this on any console right now. Like, these are all 32-bit systems, right, that like can do instruction sets at 32-bit registers. So they're saying, oh, so let's say you don't need all 32 bits to process this. You can do this in 16 bits. which is a half load, and it'll be faster because you can do more instructions at a time. So the pipeline is going to be the same. That's the important part. The pipeline is the same. It just depends on how you use it. Like, you can have 32-bit registers and use half of it for a certain, like the high for a certain thing and the low for a certain thing. So it's like, you theoretically, that's, you can already do that. This new feature is just a way to incentivize and to force people into use their code more efficiently, or at least use the parts that don't like need more processing bandwidth to like do it. So it's just one of those things that it's a good marketing ploy to like throw out, but it's not something that is particularly new. It's like people are all coding their, all developers are coding their stuff in 32 bits, like variables and stuff like that, right? So it's just saying, okay, you have to like, you don't need 32 bits. You can render hair follicles at 16 bit at a time. So like, you can do that right now. It's just a way or a means to get you to do it, and a way to sell the system more. If that makes sense.
Right. I just feel like this is a buzzer. This is blast processing, and no matter, they could march out as many developers as they want talking about like, oh, I've been waiting for this feature. Really? Have you? Because this seems like nonsense to me. Like, it really is, because it's like, well, I could have a train that goes 60 miles an hour and pack it with 80-foot long cargo containers, but I could say, well, I could get twice as many 40-foot cargo containers on. Yes, but that's the same amount of cargo containers. So it's like, what are you saving? And it's like, oh, go through faster. The train moves at 60 miles an hour. It's moving at the same speed. So you're really not like, and then to really take advantage of it, you need a compiler, and you need to, like Carlos said, change the integers you're using to leverage this power. And I'm not saying that, like, I don't know if Ubisoft did that already, like made a move over this. They seem to have, but I don't think this is gonna make this tremendous difference. And you're not gonna see double the teraflops or anything. Like, if anyone says that, they're fucking don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah, they're lying. This is gonna give you better graphics than PC gaming. I mean, PlayStation will reign supreme among consoles, and all PC gamers will run to buy a PlayStation Pro because the secret sauce is going to be that potent.
And they're going to burn their PCs too, you know?
Yeah, I mean, they won't even need them anymore.
Think about, like, this is almost like ESRAM. What was ESRAM? ESRAM was the secret sauce of Xbox. Microsoft put this piddly little amount of super fast RAM into the system for some reason and said, well, if you code against it, technically, since it has a higher bus speed, it'll be faster. Yes, but it's not enough to load any appreciable texture, so no one used it. So it's useless, right? That was their secret sauce. It really was useless. It's like, I don't know, Tony and I don't like spicy food. And it's like, but if you put a little atomic sauce on it, yeah, but I could punch you in the face. I'm not going to put atomic sauce on it. So no, we're not going to use it.
Yeah, this is also reminiscent of DX12. Remember how that was going to change the game? Didn't really.
Oh, my God. They were arguing a library was going to make...
You know what changes the game? Hardware architecture.
Yeah, this... Because if you think about it, this isn't an architectural design change. This is something that, retroactively can be used on previous hardware. So, like, this new Vega chip, like, it's like, oh, this Vega chip is, like, going to do this new feature, right? But, yeah, like, but previous AMD architectures are going to be able to do this, too. It's not like something just popped out of nowhere and like got put in by God into this old chipset so it can do new things.
Yeah, and this is not new either for a game company to take some advanced features that the next gen of GPU that we're going to get from the company and put in the last one. Look, the Tegra that the Switch is using has some Pascal optimizations. Don't make it a Pascal. It's certainly running like your GeForce in your computer, right? Don't get fooled by that, you know.
Yeah, it's just one of those things. Again, it all depends on the developers and all that other stuff to do these sorts of things. So if it's to their, if it means that they have to do some additional development and they're willing to put in the time, yes, okay, you got this new unpacking thing. But other than that, whatever. You know?
That's silliness. just to be honest.
And none of you Xbox guys are going to hear that.
Nope, none of this shit. Think about it. We're just as critical about this as we were with DX12, right? They're not going to hear that. If we were a true Sony pony podcast, we'd be praising this thing. We'd be all running around here with our shirts off, like slapping our bellies right now, you know?
But Kamala style, Kamala. Okay.
Just so that we have this in not really, but essentially black and white, is there anybody here who doesn't think for the most part that this is dumb and pointless?
It's stupid. Fucking dumb.
Turnout has unanimously decided.
Yeah.
It just isn't like why, you know, obviously, yes, we want, you know, they want to have some talking points about the new whatever. But at the same time, again, and I've posted this on my Twitter.
Oh.
And even Mr. Iwata knew this back in 2008 when he said this out of GDC. He said, software sells hardware. That's all it is.
Exactly, so, man.
No matter how many gigaflops or megaflops you got in that shit, you know? If you don't get the fucking games, then you ain't selling. 3DO was one of the most powerful consoles out there at the time. And it cost $600 goddamn. $700. And it had a handful of decent games. Those weren't enough to sell that shit. Learn from history, guys. Just because these things are powerful and they can, you know, they can render every single fucking wrinkle on your face, put like gray in your hair, all kinds of shit like that, doesn't matter.
Wait, hold on. I'm stopping right now. Are you telling me that because the Xbox One X costs $500 and has games that are available on their systems, it won't be a success? You're telling me that the power alone won't help it succeed, won't help it destroy Sony, won't help it destroy PC gaming? Is that what you're insinuating here?
With a high price point, I mean, it's almost like some of us have been around long enough to see this cycle happen time and time again.
Yeah,
I swear, man. Anyway,
here's the thing. It is. I'm not going to say that it's not exciting to have new tech out on the market, stuff that has the potential to make things look really cool. But at the same time, just about the games, man. What do we got? What do we got coming out for this, for the new Xbox? That's gonna blow our minds and make us want to have this new iteration of this console. So far, they haven't shown us anything. And same thing with the PlayStation Pro. The only difference is that the PlayStation at this point in time is already running ahead of the race.
Yeah.
Already. So it's going to be difficult to kind of like, you know, or anybody who's already owns a PlayStation 4 pretty much owns one.
I think you're going to see more of this next generation. Like, this is essentially a beta or a test bed. If this is a feature that developers like, and like, this isn't, yeah, being beta tested to players. This is being beta tested to developers. If this is a feature that they like and they can find more ways to get more out of their games with this, then the next iteration of hardware will be more accommodating to actually be able to do those things. As Chris said, it won't have Pascal features. It'll be a Pascal fucking chipset if that's what the market comes to demand. So I don't think even if we see a small boost, it would be that you would see this reflected in the hardware architecture of next generation. So yeah, sure, it's a little thing that we could all start to get excited about, but I think if it actually matters, it'll manifest itself more fully down the road, and that's the time to get excited about it.
Yeah. All right, man, let's move on to the next question here. Mr. Goridi. So he's asking us, for those of you who have played Ni No Kuni, how do you feel about them ditching familiars for Ni No Kuni 2? Familiars are like little Pokemon type creatures that you can have in your party. It is weird, you know, because they, you know, I think you can only have two main party members and then the Pokemon kind of offset that. So I'm going to guess they're just going to have maybe three party members. It's fine, I guess, but, you know, I have to wait and see. I haven't really delved in enough with this subject to know more about how they're, because I'm like, okay, if you're going to take that element away, what are you adding in to replace it? I haven't seen too much of that, you know?
I feel like a lot of that's those things that we're hearing about the new Ni No Kuni. I think a lot of that really has to do with the fact that they're trying to kind of, you know, the original Ni No Kuni did pretty good.
Yeah.
it didn't do great. And I feel like this is something that they're trying to do to try to make it a little bit more acceptable to the most of the audience out there.
I heard Ni No Kuni actually did way better in America than it did in Japan, which is interesting.
Hmm.
You know, like it was the most successful here, and it actually did better here than they expected, but it didn't do as good over there as they expected. It's very interesting, you know. So yeah, I don't think we have anything more to say about that. So I want to move on to something.
I do.
Did you play Ni No Kuni, Brett? I didn't know if you did or not.
Yes, I did. Ah, and nice. I enjoyed the hell out of it.
Nice.
So, fuck this shit.
Why is that?
Essentially, Ni No Kuni was the unlicensed actual close to Pokemon game with, an art style from a celebrated creator. Like it was a Pokemon filling wrapped in a Princess Mononoke burrito wrapping. Like it was this beautiful thing. And now they turned it into like this automated thing where you like, you control it via pop-up menus. Like what the fuck is wrong with everybody in the world when everybody understands that, look, people want a Pokemon type game for a console that would be multiplayer. Gee, people would love that, but nobody wants to fucking make that. Ni No Kuni came so close. All they had to do was add multiplayer, but now they're kind of moving further away. And while I won't say it's made me completely disinterested in the game, like, man, I like monster fighting. I like collecting and leveling up monsters. What is, and then fighting them using a turn-based system. I don't think that's too terribly much to ask, and it's not like the market is flooded with this shit. So I guess that's my rant. It's made me significantly less excited about it.
Interesting. Yeah, to me, I could have done away with the whole monster stuff in the other game, to be honest, but, you know, we'll see how it turns out.
What was like taking Pokemon and taking Pokemon out. Like, what? Okay. Like,
well, that's the thing. Like, to me, I had a kind of, like, I was playing Ni No Kuni. I liked it. Then they introduced the monster stuff. I'm like, oh, this Pokemon shit. I don't know if I'm feeling it. I eventually got used to it, but so that's why I'm like, if they get rid of it, I don't really care, because that to me, the familiar thing was such a minuscule part of that game. It kind of doesn't matter. But that's just me, though. You know, the whole thing of racing monsters is just weird. You know,
I feel like it's a weird sort of way of having your giving you the ability to have a 10,000 characters.
You know what I'm kind of. You know, it's like, why? I'm not going to get into this thing, because I'm like, why don't you just make an actual realized character instead of all these little side characters? You know what I mean? Like a fully fleshed human character. I'd rather have that with a backstory instead of just some random monster you find in the field, you know? Anyway, I want to get to this stuff. He left a comment. Brett, this one's actually directed at you, even though we all kind of agree with what you said. So he goes, I got to call shenanigans on Brett for saying 99% of pre-order bonuses are garbage. Some of them are great. And then he lists them. He goes, Battlefield Bad Company 2 gave you early access to early enlistees group, which gave you all DLC for free. Demon Souls came with an art book, mini guide, and a physical soundtrack. Persona 5 gave you that steelbook. Lots of other games have given you steelbooks. Early access to games or access to closed betas. Best Buy's Gamer Club gives you $10 gift card to a lot of pre-orders on top of getting the $12 off for new games. You practically get the games for $38 plus tax by pre-ordering them at that point. And then he lists the current games that are subject to this. Mario Odyssey, Destiny 2, Madden, NBA, Shadow War, Call of Duty, go on and on and on and on and on. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, Brett, since this was directed. Yeah. Since this was directed at you, why don't you go first? Even though, like I said, we all kind of agree with Brett on this one. Most pre-order bonuses are fucking bullshit. And I'm sorry, I'm calling this one. All right. A steelbook is not a good pre-order bonus. Who the fuck cares? You know. Anyway, go on, Brett.
Some people do. I mildly do, but not that much. Okay. First, I'm going to discredit your Best Buy Gamer Club thing by saying that I had said in the podcast, immediately after that, I actually led off with it too, that Amazon Prime is the best pre-order bonus because you get $12 off a game. I know Best Buy Gamers Club is the same thing, but it's just because I didn't call out Best Buy doesn't mean, okay, yes, it's the same thing as Amazon Prime, except with Amazon Prime, I don't need to get out of my goddamn house. It just shows up on my doorstep the day of release. So that's why I like Amazon Prime, and that's why I had said that was my favorite pre-order bonus, even though it's not technically a pre-order bonus. So Now, I will admit there are some games that come with some good rewards, but let's actually even break down this list. What's the pre-order bonus that we're getting for Super Mario Odyssey? What's the pre-order bonus we're getting for Destiny? I'm pretty sure it's a digital fucking gun. What pre-order bonus do we get with Madden? I'm not sure about a lot of these. I'm going to go ahead and say that out of the list that you provided, probably about 75 to 80% of them give you digital content for free that you're probably going to find later in the game, or equipment that you'll find, you know, something that you'll find better later in the game. I don't know what Battlefront 2's pre-order bonus is. I'll look this up as we kind of go through here, but because I didn't have a chance to really prepare for this. But yeah, there are some cool little knickknacks. My favorite has to be actually CD Projekt Red. Even though I'm not a huge Witcher fan, like, they come through on what they deliver in the box. But most of the time, I stick by, pre-orders are just the first runs of the game. They're not even actually pre-orders, because you'll see these in the case at Walmart 2-3 weeks after release. And yeah, you get a digital fucking gun and an exclusive armor pack if you bought it at Walmart, or a different one if you bought it at GameStop or any of those other things. But like I said, somebody else talk so I can actually look up some of these pre-order bonuses.
Yeah, man, I'll go to you. Chris, as you're talking, go ahead.
I know the Demon Souls pre-order. I got that book, right? Most of the print of that book was defective. You had to actually cut the cover off and send it to Atlas so they could send you a new one, because the glue was messed up and some other stuff's messed up. Look, we've all had we've all been on that craze where it's like, oh, I get this, I get that, right? Back when they used to give you physical things. Some of those things don't come through, or some of them are just lousy. I talked about the Dead Space 2 one with the fucking midget-sized blaster.
Plasma cutter.
Look, Manny got a batarang with one of the Batmans that you could club a seal with. It's like stupid.
It was probably the worst quality thing ever.
Yeah.
Like, it was not even like, okay, you can make plastic look like metal. This just looked like a cheesy plastic toy.
Yeah, I think it looked like shit.
It was crap.
Oh, like, hey guys, Destiny 2's pre-order is early access to Destiny 2 beta.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Some of these are worthless. Come on, I bought Resident Evil 5 early. I got a steel book. I don't care. I got a set of glasses with it that I can't use. They're as fragile as fuck. I came with a shitty little statue, the same low quality one that came with the Street Fighter 4 when you pre-ordered that.
My statue for that Resident Evil, you lived together at the time. It fell off the shelf onto a rug.
Man, Adam, mute yourself, brother.
I did.
Oh, did you? It fell off of a not very high dresser onto some carpet, and it shattered.
Wow.
Yes, that is the hardest. You know, those things were horrible.
Wow, that's crazy, man. But yeah, no, most of the time you don't really get anything physical. And if you do get something like an art book, like, I was always hyped up, oh shit, it comes with an art book. You get these little fucking things, you know, that aren't even worth it.
You want real art books, you go to a Japanese bookstore or something, find the original book with the real thing, you know, buy that. You don't need to pre-order anything and you'll get a better art book. I've done that for the Souls games. They put out these art books in Japanese, but they're beautiful and they're huge. Like, so you get way more for that. And then I hate when they give you an art book and they just give you the fucking game renders.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah, the promotional art, you know?
Yeah,
you literally fill the book with a bunch of promotional art. Wonderful.
Where's the concept art?
Yeah.
I think we'll stick with the they're still bullshit.
Yeah, they're bullshit. Let's just be honest here.
Some of them, unless they give you something like a game, another game.
Most of them Telltales, don't, though. You know?
Telltales is good for that. Telltales is good for giving another game as a pre-order.
You also said this on the previous show, too.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Brett, quickly. This isn't an official question, but Hussein Unsal, he goes to you, if you want a Pokemon-like game, buy a Pokemon game.
I don't want to play it on a goddamn
3DS? Like,
8-bit system.
Oh, shit.
I don't even care if it's a handheld system. It just looks like such shit.
No, the last one looks pretty nice.
I got to admit, Sun's a good game. Sun and Moon is a good game, but it does look janky. I mean, even on the 3DS, you look at the sky textures and whatever, and they're pixelated as shit. It looked terrible. It's
bullshit.
On that screen.
When those two, like wannabe gangsters show up on the screen, the ones that do like the gang sign moves,
yeah,
yo, I'm like, yo, this is fucking ridiculous, man. They look horrible.
It's just like, oh, Japan. Oh, you make me laugh.
Oh, shit. Hussein is from Australia. What's up, Australia? You know, that's awesome, man. Worldwide throwdown, man. All right, let's move on here to my
Before we move on, the couple I've had to look up, I've got a chance to look up Call of Duty, and these are all from the list that you provided. Okay, so I'm just saying this. Call of Duty gets you a Nazi Zombies camo skin for your gun. Star Wars Battlefront gets you early beta access and two outfits. And Madden gets you an elite player from your favorite NFL team as well as five squad packs, which sounds like free microtransaction bucks.
Hey, that's Brett.
I'm going to explain everything you told me.
You know what you get with all these games? A bunch of bullshit.
Hey, I'm just picking games off the list he sent and saying the actual pre-orders for them.
Yeah, but either way, we kind of proved our point here. It's fucking bullshit, man. All right, let's move on here to my man, Mr. K Cube in the house. So he actually asked me this a couple of days ago, me and Torrance. He wanted to know what our opinions are. So I hope you guys saw the video. So he wants to know what we think about how game companies avoid paying taxes. I didn't even know about this shit. You know, so Carlos, I know you have some thoughts on this, so go ahead, man.
Yeah, like it's like companies like fucking Valve and Activision Blizzard, like they have these like companies in Holland, right? And or the Netherlands, where they get to do like partnerships, and they kind of like say that they're distributing the game from that country so they don't get taxed, right, from the US. So there's this law that says if like a fucking publisher is distributing a game with a partnership from another country, like it's kind of like a conflict where they don't know who to tax, right? So they don't get taxed on any of the income, and it's bullshit, man. Like it's like these companies are making so much fucking income that's not getting taxed. The only time they get that income gets taxed is when they try to retrieve it. So it gets taxed with like a 15%, right? Which is like way lower than the standards for like those types of corporations. They get like normally taxed like 30-some%. So they get taxed lower than we get taxed. And like they show that all this like quote unquote revenue they make, they don't put that back into their companies. Like Activision is releasing all of these like workers, right? And all these divisions, they close it down because they found the formula. They have the fucking like Overwatch, like Call of Duty way, where they make most of their money off of microtransactions. So they like they're not investing on games anymore. They're investing in features and microtransactions to fund their games, and that's what drives the games now. So it's fucking sad, man. It's like the death of gaming to me.
Well, this isn't. You know, you need to just game companies, you guys know. I mean,
yeah, no, the movie studios do it all the goddamn time. TV does it all the fucking time.
It's a pervasive problem, I think. Oh, yeah. It doesn't make it any better that Activision does. It's still a shitty practice, you know. They take advantage of a tax loophole. You can invest money overseas into a parent company, and then, yeah, like you said, it gets locked up in this loophole, and you don't pay any taxes on it, right? But Google, Apple, all of them, they offshore money and all this stuff. So, yeah, it's a shitty practice.
What they'll even a lot of times do is they'll buy out a shell company. Like, you know, say I have a multi-million dollar corporation here. I go buy a shell corporation in, you know, Northern Ireland or something like that, and say that, oh, well, this shell corporation is, you know, half of my business partner. You know, it's half the company or 51% of the company. Therefore, technically, we're based out of here, even though it's, you know, only, you know, a two-room office with a mailbox. Technically, that's our home base where we have a U.S. base of operations too. But by doing that, the U.S. can't tax the money that goes into that shell corporation. So it's while it's shitty behavior, it's also kind of normalized. And I'm not saying that's a good thing, but I'm also saying I don't think it spells doom and gloom for anything in the gaming world. I don't think this is some big horrible thing that gaming is doing. I just think this is some big horrible thing corporations do.
Well, the reason why I say that it's horrible for gaming is because like Activision is making so much money off of these games, but they're kind of portraying themselves as someone that's not making as much money as they actually are. So they're laying off all these people and all these studios and all these different types of developers. And they are focusing all their assets, and it's minimal assets at that, on games like Call of Duty and Overwatch to propel them, because they know that they make all sorts of money from microtransactions. So that's like their new business strategy, and that's what's driving their games. So their games are not, they're not investing on new experiences. They're investing on a formula that they know is going to work, and they know it's going to generate a profit. And unfortunately, it's one of those types of games that most of us don't like, at least on Throwdown.
They all I mean, we see it with what you just said about Madden, with Mutt, you know, what they were giving, those packs. You know, that's, again, leading into hoping that you get hooked on it and you start actually investing real money into buying those packs. You know, so it's EA's doing it. They're all doing it.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Like, not just, it's not even like exclusive to video games. It's like Brett said, it's Google, or I think Chris said it, Google or Microsoft, they all do it.
As I said, also the movie companies do it too. You know, how many movie studios have you seen? You know, all of a sudden they have all these Chinese companies investing in their things. They in animation. This has also been done too. I worked on a show where I used to work in for kids. And what they did to save on money was, because in Canada there is a tax write-off that any shows that are being done in Canada, if they have a certain amount of Canadian employees, they will get a tax break, and they'll get, you know, get funding from the government. So therefore, what they did was they made sure that they had, even in the States, had a certain amount of Canadian employees on the show, so that they could get that, essentially partially fund the show through the Canadian government.
Why do you think so much shit is filmed in Georgia now?
Why do you, why also Georgia? What do you think, how do you think that fucking, what's his name? The guy who made Postal.
Uebo.
How do you think that Uebo was able to make all those goddamn shitty movies? It's because the German government, more essentially, he found a loophole within the German government to essentially fund his own films.
Yeah. You know, they closed that loophole because of him.
Yep. And they closed it because of him.
That's crazy.
So, all these corporations and people are going to start, they're going to constantly be taking advantage of these things. And the thing is, you know, all the millions of dollars that they're, you know, that these games sort of make, who do you think that all that, where do you think all that money's going to? It's not going to the employees. It's going to the fucking fat ass who sits on the top of everything else.
Yep.
Yeah. And this is like, this is supposed to be like taxable income. So this should be going to the people, not just the employees. Mm-hmm. This should be going to us, to the, like, to the US, so
to our goddamn infrastructure.
Who do you think is getting the brunt of the tax out of those companies? It's not the fucking company. It's the employees, the people who get a check every fucking month.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the taxes is getting paid.
I still blame, and I know I say this a lot, I still blame a lot of this on being publicly traded companies, because it's not enough that you make, you know, record-breaking profits. It's, you got to make this much more than you made last year, because people are buying and selling stocks, you know, based off growth trajectories and predictions and things like that. So at a certain point, you've detached yourself from even whether or not you're successful, and, you know, it's almost like losing to a ghost lap runner of yourself. Like, you're like, I set that lap time. Like, well, yeah, but you weren't as much faster than your old lap time as we thought you were going to be, so you fail. So, you know, companies are constantly trying to find ways to cut corners, and they will do some incredibly shitty things like this. I mean, that's, in my opinion, the basic problem that we're seeing here is they're trying to cut corners to increase profits to make their shareholders happy, and they'll do so by sheltering as much money as possible and laying off as many of the little guys that actually help to build their success as possible, so that they can save their own golden fucking parachutes. I don't think it's any more complicated than that.
Yeah, it's crony capitalism 101.
All right, let's move on here to my man, Mr. G, Megaforce 123. So he goes, failed IPs you would like to see given a second chance. He goes, I would like to see a refinement and reimagining of Alpha Protocol. We've kind of answered this question before, so we'll just run through it quickly. So, Adam, what failed IP do you want to see returned?
Bionic Commando. Remember when they tried to do the reboot?
That kind of came back, though. Yeah,
it failed. Remember when they tried to do the new version, not the side-scroller.
But the side-scroller kind of helped the franchise.
The side-scroller actually did well.
Not part two. Part two bombed.
Part two bombed because the fucking big game, because the big fucking game closed down the goddamn studio. So it wasn't even the same people.
But that's the point is, it still came out, and it was horrible. And then when they tried to do the open world one, that one sucked.
And that's what killed the studio. The thing is that both of those Bionic Commandos games were developed by the same studio. The one thing is that big game, the Mike Patton game, killed their studio, and then they made the sequel because the 2D side scroller did well last time, but none of the same people were working on it, so that's why it failed.
Yeah, I'd like to see that get fixed and come back.
All right, Brett, what about you? Failed franchise that needs to return?
Singularity.
Oh shit. Yeah, that game didn't actually go anywhere, did it? So I guess that counts.
It's not that it failed. It's that it was overshadowed by some similar games, mostly BioShock Infinite. Like it's a good game, but that was a tall shadow to be in, and it's just so. It's not even underrated because everybody I know that plays it, like, oh man, that game was amazing. Just nobody played it.
Okay, all right, Brian. What about you?
So calm. I'll say this until the day I die. SOCOM.
All right.
Carlos, actually, I'll agree with that.
Okay, Chris, you want to go with that one too? All right.
SOCOM's awesome.
All right, Carlos.
Also, can I say Portal as an honorable mention? It's not fair.
Half-Life won't give you – I mean, not Half-Life. See? I already said that. Fuck you.
just a little side note. You know what nobody ever talks about? How fucking Valve literally fired every single one of their internal developers that developed all those games like Half-Life and Portal. It's kind of sad if you think about it.
Portal is never coming back, which is why I want an honorable mention on the list. It didn't fail, but it's never coming back.
All right, fair enough. All right, Carlos, what you got?
Lost Odyssey. Like, I think Lost Odyssey is my favorite Final Fantasy game.
All right, Manny.
The Bouncer. I would love to see, again, I keep saying this, I would love to see somebody like a Platinum Games, a company that really understands really fun, visceral combat, and take that sort of game and, you know, pump it up a little bit. Take, you know, it's got fun character designs, you know, even if it's just a fucking remake, I would love to see them try it. It was a good-looking game at the time, and it still holds up now. I would like to see them try it over again.
Yeah, even though the last actual installment of this didn't fail. Soul Reaver, bring that shit back. Fucking NOS got bombed. You know? Yeah, bring that shit back. That's always my internal answer. Soul Reaver needs to come back. All right.
Or even the Legacy of Kain.
Legacy of Kain, Soul Reaver, I don't care. Bring it back. You know? Either one of those.
Track and Field.
You know? Who said this shit? Somebody said F-Zero. Yeah, bring that shit back too. By the way,
isn't there a story about that? Why they don't want to bring it back and they made that other racing game?
Remember, I heard there was a story. What's the story behind that?
Some big story. Oh man, I'll find it. There was some big story about why it was never intentionally supposed to be a hit and that they didn't want it to be a hit. And that's why
F-Zero? What the F-Zero. Fuck?
There was some shit. Like, there's another game on Switch right now, or is it coming? That's a racing game.
That's RMX right now.
That's a clone, but that was an indie
development. Yeah, and that's the thing. People are like, well, why can't they just make an F-Zero? Obviously, they know people want it, and they're like, because they don't want it.
But the thing is, like, wait, hold on. How can they say that when the new Mario Kart game has a fucking F-Zero track on it?
There's something going on. There's a reason that they didn't make it.
There's a reason they don't talk about Gunpei Yokoi either.
All right. By the way, quick shout out to Riku Sun One, who's in the chat right now. He's actually he began his Final Fantasy journey, man. He beat Final Fantasy One. He's playing through two right now. Good for him. That's awesome. Right? It's funny. It's just funny about Riku, because when I first met him, when me and Manny first met him, and Brian too, he didn't like RPGs at all. You know,
he wasn't about touching that shit. He's like, I don't like those games.
Yeah, you know, but it's funny because when we met him, he was the Japanese guy for SDFU and Play. So we started asking him about all these Japanese games. Like, I don't play that. I only play, like Dynasty Warriors. I'm like, that's you can't call yourself the Japanese correspondent if that's all you fucking play, you know. But now he would earn that right, you know. Mm-hmm. He plays a ton of Japanese games.
So let's send the current Riku back in time to replace the original Riku. As the Japanese correspondent on SDFU play.
That'd be hilarious. He was playing Persona 5. Did he finish that one?
Yeah, he got the platinum.
Oh, he did.
he made us all look like chumps. He got the platinum in Persona 4 too. I think he put
I remember that. He talked about that.
Yeah, like 300 hours into that shit. You know,
he had to do all the voice dialogue or something for one of the characters.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. By the way, the equivalent trophy of that for Persona 5 is easy. I got it without even trying, you know? All right, so his next question is, this is an interesting one. What's the most mature game Nintendo has ever created? Not necessarily in terms of ESRB rating, but in terms of themes and plot. Eternal Darkness, right? That would count?
I would say Eternal Darkness.
I was going to say Eternal Darkness.
Yeah.
That's like the first one that pops to mind. I would say Eternal Darkness, and then maybe in there would be Hotel Dusk, which was a kind of a murder mystery sort of game.
Was that a Nintendo 2?
Yes, it was.
Okay.
It was a second party game.
Trace Memory, the hell company that was.
But they're gone. Ching? Yeah, those guys, they're gone.
Yeah. Yeah, but yeah, any other games besides Eternal Darkness is maybe like the only one.
Is that the only one? Like, I can't even think of one. Like,
that's what I'm saying.
Eternal Darkness was heavy. Like, even Eternal Darkness gave Hellblade a run for its money. Yeah. Like, as I was playing Hellblade, I was like, this is fucked up. Not quite Eternal Darkness fucked up, though.
Yeah, because the thing is, like, he's specifically talking about mature themes. Like, I could say Mad World, because that game has a bunch of violence. But
that game is not very mature.
No, I found one, Geist for GameCube. Here, I'll put the link in there.
I heard of Geist.
That was a first-person shooter on GameCube, and it was published by Nintendo.
Yeah. Is it by the same studio that made Eternal Darkness? Is that what I'm... reading that right?
Endspace, I don't know what... they made.
Oh no, but it is the second game to receive an M rating on the GameCube. Okay, after Eternal Darkness.
Yeah.
All right, I guess we're just going to go with Eternal Darkness. You know, Nintendo's always all about kiddie stuff, but not with that game.
I find it interesting how mature, there's a mature rating and there's also maturity.
Yeah, here's another
one. To be honest, there hasn't been a lot of, you know, there's a very small amount of games that actually are mature, as in grown up, as opposed to showing tits and ass and people exploding into blood.
Yeah, and you're talking about all across the board, not just Nintendo.
Oh, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
By the way,
Bury Me Hollow says he's giving it to Majora's Mask. He goes, the shit was deep with death overbearing theme of sorrow across Terminal while the world was ending. I could count, I guess.
I agree with that. I'd also like to throw in Metroid.
Really
think about Metroid and really just think about what the fuck Metroids are.
Well, okay, you got to go deep, because I'm like, look, they're fucking aliens I kill. That's all I know about Metroids, you know?
They're like parasitic, mind-controlling aliens. They're kind of the first iteration of the idea. Like, they kind of remind me of a beta of the face things from Half-Life.
Hold on, here's another one. Earthbound / Mother.
Yep. Earthbound,
I can see that. Yep, definitely.
Awesome. But again, guys, remember, we're not talking about just blood and shit.
Yeah, we're not talking about blood and guts.
Does Bayonetta count? Since
No.
It's kind of, isn't it published by Nintendo? Well, Bayonetta 2.
Yeah. No, I would, because it's still a wild, crazy, over-the-top game. It's not exactly mature, you know what I mean?
It's mature as an
M rating, but yeah.
As an M rating, but it's not mature as in content. It's very childish, that game. But that's what you kind of want, though. It's, you know.
Cool. All right. We'll move on here to Black Metal Gamer. So his first question is, this is an interesting one. I actually had to ask him to clarify this. He was like, what consoles do you feel aged great and what consoles age horribly? He is not talking about software. He's talking about the actual physical consoles. So this is an interesting one. So which ones do you think have aged the best throughout, like, the
20 Sega Age, Genesis. Genesis aged the best.
Game Boy SP. That one you could still play. Still play the games. They still hold up. They're still fun.
Dude, yeah, the Game Boy Advance Micros, those things are solid. I still see those things out and working.
I mean, you can just put that for like all Nintendo handhelds, because Game Boy Color still works fine. My Game Boy Advance still works. Like, all of them are just solid. You can even, like, you can say that about a lot of the other, like, Nintendo consoles as well.
I was thinking that.
Like, the only thing that I would knock, for example, the Nintendo, the NES Nintendo, or the SNES, yeah, is like the
trade shit.
Yeah, like the way the color like gets all weird. Like,
oh, the SNES, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, man, I was like, looks ugly.
Yeah, the SNES discolors really badly.
Yeah, it's because of the treatment they put on or something like that. They explain why that happens.
It's
a flame retardant plastic that they use that acts when it is exposed to air, it starts to turn yellow.
Your man is crazy.
Especially, I've seen Super Nintendos that have lived in houses with smokers, and that shit, for some reason, more than other plastics, like, yellows really bad.
It's the same shit that your monitors you were made out of back in the day, too. Same stuff. Your monitors all turn nasty and orange and yellow because of that plastic that they are made of. But I think there is I don't know what portion of, at one point, they did stop making the Super Nintendos out of that material. So there are Super Nintendos that look pristine, you know, where they're not yellow.
I've seen those, and I've always wondered, like, how did they keep them so nice?
I mean, it could be a number of things that they may have kept it cool, or, you know, I don't exactly know how this plastic reacts, but I do know that I think there was a generation of those Super Nintendos that were not made out of the same nasty plastic. But here's the thing. Those things started turning yellow pretty close to when you bought them. Like, maybe a few, 3 years later, you had a nasty looking PlayStation. Those Super Nintendo, sorry.
Yeah, yeah. No, absolutely. As far as consoles go, I would still stick by Sega Genesis. I still see you buy a secondhand one of those from a thrift store and still be like, I have no idea. This could be 3 years old. It could be 5 years old. It could be 20 years old. I don't really know.
Black Age as well.
I still remember blowing cartridges, though, for my Genesis. I remember that something. Not as bad as Nintendo.
Not as bad as Nintendo. Right. The Nintendo one was the original Nintendo Nintendo Entertainment System one, at least the one we got here in the States. That was a design flaw. That the leads or whatever did not touch when you stuck the disc. They stuck the cartridge into the console. Yeah. It was really meant to just be a top loader, like it was in Japan. That's why if you saw everybody really wants that later edition of the Nintendo Entertainment System where it was a top loader, because that one is a lot more reliable than the original one. Talking about old games.
I'll tell you like what systems didn't hold up: the PS3, the Xbox 360.
The
OS is what killed it, man. Now it chugs, man. That shit chugs.
PS3 died like a year after you bought it, the fat one, you know?
Yeah, man, I still have my PS3 fat. I turned it on the other day. Yo, it doesn't even need a second to sound like a fucking leaf blower, man.
Wow.
my
modern systems are trash, man.
Oh, dude, I went through two Dreamcasts. They both died. Damn.
Well, didn't you say like there was a Mad Catz controller that killed your console?
Yeah.
Both of them fell prey to third party controllers.
Well, dude, that's why we think Mad Catz is a piece of shit.
Yep. Well, Mad Catz is gone. So
yeah, but at the same time, like a lot of other, they worked on a lot of other systems, and the fact that it was apparently that easy to just short out the board, and there was really nothing you could do, the system was just trash after that, was not real great, in my opinion, in terms of design.
Hey, what about the PS2? That thing was a piece of shit, you know?
Yeah, the PS2, you looked at that thing wrong and shit just fell off of it.
Yeah, so the truth says he still has his PS2, Dreamcast, N64, and PS3, and they all still work. So there you go.
Kudos.
My PlayStation 2 still works, even though we did kind of mod it with
we did
secret thing.
Wink, wink.
All of my consoles, all of my older consoles, at least the ones that I have, my Genesis still work when I sent it to my friend. My Nintendo still works. my Super Nintendo, that one bad years ago when it was originally out, it actually, something happened and all the graphics turned black and white. So I don't know what it was. In fact, and then back then I didn't know that Nintendo had a plan that just you could send any of the consoles in and they would fix them. I didn't know that then. My Genesis, I actually did have to fix. It shorted out at my dad's house when I brought it there. When we were playing and it just didn't turn on. That should cost a lot of money to fix. So I mean, now, I have to say that the ones that are, I would have to say that the Genesis is probably the one that's the last. Even the Sega Master System, and Chris could tell you a really great story about that thing.
Oh shit!
yeah. My buddy Mike, we pulled his Master System out of his attic and we hooked it up. Like, oh man, we're gonna play Fantasy Zone, all these old games. We turn it on, and I'm like, yo, what is that smell? His power supply? Yo, that thing just blew up.
Oh shit!
That shit was dead. I was like, oh man.
And that fits with a lot of what the classic gamers out there say about the Sega Master System, is that there's some really, really shitty parts inside of there that go bad. Like, they used to go bad even then. Like really close to when you bought them, they went bad.
Think about it. You can turn on a Game Boy right now from the first one, and it works, right? Game Gear, the capacitors in there are such shit, they'll dissolve by themselves. They don't work after a while. You could keep it pristine in the box, go open it now, and take it out, and it won't work.
Wow. Yeah, that's
crazy. It just ate away. I do have to say, I have to give a shout-out to the GameCube, because, and this is true, I was leaving my girlfriend's house at the time, and I had a big skater bag filled with books, and for some idiot reason, I had my GameCube at the very bottom of it with like a bunch of books and heavy shit on top of that. So heavy, in fact, that when I started like jogging down the set of cement stairs, both straps snapped simultaneously and the thing dropped about 6 feet and landed smack on the cement. Went back in, popped on my GameCube. It didn't work. I started flipping the fuck out, flipped it open, noticed the lens had kind of like popped slightly, like it was not at the edge of the track, it was slightly in, so I popped it back at the edge of the track. Thing worked again for another 4 fucking years.
Nice. I remember on X-Play, they actually did a test, like they beat the shit out of an Xbox, a PS2.
Dropped it from a roof, remember?
They dropped it, they crushed it. The PS2 didn't last long. That was the first one to go. And the GameCube was the one that came out the winner.
even the
big-ass Xbox eventually stopped working, you know, and that took a lot of punishment.
Dude, those Xboxes, they were, you could beat a hobo to death with that shit.
Yeah, but the fucking GameCube, it laughed at both of them. It was like, nope, I'm still working, bitches.
It had a handle. Like, you could just pretty much throw it across the room.
That's crazy. All right, man, let's move on to this next question. You know, with budget games like ReCore at $40, Ratchet & Clank at $40, and Hellblade at $30, and Uncharted Lost Legacy at $40, do you feel we may get back more mid-market gaming at mid-tier prices like 5th and 6th gen had, and what future would that mean for gaming prices? Yeah, man, hey, there's nothing wrong with... Here's the thing, most gamers, they see games cost that price like, oh, it's got to be a shitty game. You know, that's not necessarily the truth. You know, like...
He left that Absolver, man.
Well, he left it. I didn't write that shit.
No, I'm saying to him. I'm saying Black Metal, you left that Absolver, man.
Yeah, but yeah, I hope it brings back more mid-tier price games, because I just hope it gets rid of the notion that just because a game doesn't cost $60 doesn't mean it's shit. You know, it's a stupid way of thinking.
I agree. Yeah.
I definitely agree, and I think what you're seeing is finally the expression of AA gaming coming back. Like, this is really stupid, actually, because these are the questions that we asked when digital gaming first came out. Like, so why are we paying $60 for a game? Well, so that they can put it in Walmart. Why do they need to put it in Walmart? So it can get more exposure. Well, okay, I guess that's fair. So why is it $60 to download? Well, because it has to be $60 at Walmart. Why does it have to be $60 at Walmart?
Yeah,
so it justifies shelf space. Okay, all of this sounds stupid, and half of it sounds really unnecessary. And some game companies have just come to that conclusion. Half of this is unnecessary, and all of it is stupid. We're just going to digitally release and release at a price point that we deem fair and competitive. And lo and behold, they're actually making some great games.
Yeah. Again, there's nothing wrong with games that don't cost $60. They don't need to cost $60, you know?
Well, most games that cost $60 don't need to cost $60. Here's that's the funny thing about it.
Yeah, here's the thing. Most games that cost $60, they don't actually cost $60. They cost about $120 if you really factor in everything you need to buy in order to fully play the game. Season passes, DLC, all this other bullshit, you know?
Dude, I'm not even talking about that. I'm talking about some of the games that release on PC on a price point under $60, and then you see go over to consoles and see a price increase to justify shelf space, because it's more like you'll see a game for like $30 on Steam, and that's not even sale prices. They just kind of came out at $30, and then it jumps over to consoles and you see it jump up to $60, and you're like, that's not distribution and printing did not change the cost that much. It's they have to have price parity, and they have to raise the price enough to justify shelf space. It's,
well, everyone's going to see that once Battlegrounds comes to Xbox. I'm sure it's not going to come out at $30.
Yeah. Oh, it's going to be a full $60 game.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. By the way, All Day Digital did ask us, what do we think about, you know, do we want to see more games like Hellblade? Yeah, we do, man. We, you know, yeah, budget games are good.
Listen, some really great games back in the day were in that lower price range, and there's no real reasons other than that to kind of to shrink the prices.
Yeah. You but know? Again, everybody just got it into their heads like, oh, the game has to be shitty if it's under 60.
No,
it's fucking dumb.
I feel like in general, also, people, are a little bit more accepting of a length of a game when the price is a little lower like that too.
Yeah,
like, well, you know, if they chose to play the game, you know, charge the game with no additional features other than internal, you know, like, you know, searching the world things. I think people, again, I said this before, I think people wouldn't have been as, what do they call it, open to them.
Yeah, well, yeah, there was several times when I was playing through that game. Welcome to Throwdown Crickets. There were several times when I was playing that game where, you know, for instance, I was running along and felt compelled to explore the environment, and suddenly I realized there's no hidden treasure, there's no loot, there's no weapons, there's no... nothing really to even no motivation to explore the environment. This is a straight cinematic experience. And for a moment, I was kind of like, oh man. And I was like, it's a $30 game. It's an indie game. It's a narrative cinematic game. It's fine. So I can say, at least personally, I definitely had a couple of those things where if I had paid $60, I might say, where's my other, do I not get another weapon? Is it just this one? There would have been several points where I would have been like, oh, what the fuck, I feel a little ripped off. And I don't even necessarily mean just the length. And as great as the game was, and I'm offering nothing but praise, like, there were those points where there was nothing to find, nothing to explore. The whole game was very straightforward. And while that's not a bad thing, it does show a lack of content that is reflected in its price point. Admittedly, the developers said this themselves. So I'm not saying this is, I'm not blowing smoke out of my ass. The developers said, you know, for the content length of the game, that they thought $30 was a fair asking price for it.
Yeah. By the way, Barry Me Hollow says Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite should be $30. Oh, man.
That shit should just be a $20 download for all the shit and DLC that those games have. I mean, fuck, even Dead or Alive eventually just went like, here's a base pack of 5 players for free, and then you can buy your other players in DLC.
You know what? Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite should be free if you send in a picture of that you bought Street Fighter V.
You know,
how about that? How about a giant apology to all of us?
Oh, man. All right, man, let's move on here to Mr. Hashling and Slasher. So, the first part of his question is weird. We're going to tackle it too. He goes, now I know you guys defend exclusives, but here's a question for you. Would it be okay to port console exclusives to PC just for the sake of preserving those games on that platform, or should things stay the same for years to come? All right, first of all, what do you mean by we defend exclusives? I know you're the guy that wants that doesn't like exclusives at all. So is that why you think we quote-unquote defend them?
I'll defend exclusives, and I'll explain it.
Yeah, explain. Okay, first, before you explain it, what is he trying to imply here? I'm confused.
Is he the one that complained about exclusives?
Yeah, he's the one that says they're they're fucking what anti-consumer.
Yeah, we talked about this. I mean,
and they're not anti-consumer, by the way. Anyway, Brad, go ahead.
I'm reading this and breaking it down. I was smoking a cigarette. Hold on 1 second.
Man, you got to be on camera when you're doing that shit.
Do you smoke or you vape? Because I remember you said you vaped before. We've seen you vape. So you do
yeah,
both?
Yeah, I used to vape. And then, you know, after my wife and I quit smoking to avoid cancer, I lost her to cancer, and I said, fuck it. So I'm smoking again and drinking whiskey. That's how it is. Let's see. Would it be okay to port console exclusives to PC just for the sake of preserving these games on that platform, or should things stay the same for years to come?
I want to talk about the first part, because I'm still trying to understand what this man's talking about. You know? I got my answer for the second part. My second part is, like, it's up to the developers to do that shit. You know? But I don't understand this whole you guys defend exclusives part. I don't get that.
I think because we don't say that they're anti-consumer, and
maybe that's why. Okay, if that's what he means, then okay, let's just move on to the main question. It's up to the companies, obviously, if they want to. Here's the thing: Microsoft games are already on PC, so it'll be up to Nintendo and Sony to do that. Should they be forced to? Absolutely not. That's up to them. You know. So that's my answer to that. You know.
Well, okay. I guess when we're getting back into the consumerism and exclusives and everything like that, like, okay. I believe that games that are brought up in a development team that is being funded by a first party, you know, Bloodborne is a good example. I think those tend to have a higher chance to be really good games. You follow me so far?
Go on.
Okay. I didn't know if I lost you guys. So they have a better chance to be a good game. They have more funding. They're generally somebody coming together and trying to put together an all-star development team or put together a lot of talent. And there's a difference between bringing together a bunch of big names and bringing together a bunch of talent inside a studio, in that one is hype and one is trying to create a quality product. So while it doesn't always work, generally, a lot of these first-party funded games are where we get most of these great iconic experiences that we've come to know and love from gaming over the years. So in theory, while you could say, yes, it's anti-consumer, in practice, what we've actually seen is that it tends to create great games. And the reason is because you're changing people's motivations. And I'm pretty sure I've said this before, but if anybody has never read a book called Freakonomics, I highly recommend reading it. It brings up a lot of good points about people's motivation, and this applies to teams and companies as well. Essentially, when you have a first-party created game, they are trying to create content that moves their hardware. So they're not trying to sell you on the hype, they're trying to sell you on the actual quality of the game. They're trying to rely on people to say, yes, this is so good, or enjoy it so much that they want to show it to their friends and then get other people to buy it, versus, you know, some of these obvious cash grab games which come out and, you know, they have a pre-order and then, you know, a shitload of DLC and it costs $200 to actually fucking play the game. There's a very, you know, Destiny, as much as some people like it, would generally not be created to sell a console. It is very different in its approach to its game than even Halo. And Halo was made to sell the consoles. It was made to be a good lasting experience that made you want to pick up the platform. Whereas Destiny, and I don't think anybody's going to argue with me on this, is crafted to milk as much money out of you as possible. It's not necessarily meant to be a lasting good experience. If it is, that's all well and good. But that's not the intention of the people making the game, because that's not where their motivation lies. And so you have this weird kind of aligning of the stars in a first-party development team where you actually motivate them to make a quality lasting product as opposed to motivating them to make a product that generates as much money as possible. One, you're trying to generate income. The other, you're trying to generate goodwill. And by trying to generate that goodwill and lasting replayability that helps sell the platform, you inadvertently make good quality, timeless games that we look back on years later with love and admiration. So while it could be construed as anti-consumerist in its practice, the end result could be nothing but good for, you know, historically good for gamers. And I don't understand the other side of that argument, because if you take away the motivation to make these great lasting games from first party studios, you wouldn't see some of the best games that we've ever played. I mean, can anybody argue this point with me? I'm honestly curious about the other side.
No one can argue that, because the other side doesn't make sense. But let's get to the actual question here. So what do you say about, you know, PlayStation, for example, throwing their exclusives on PC for the sake of preserving them for future generations, for posterity?
I think it's fine to, especially when a game becomes a legacy title, you know, timed exclusives, that's perfectly fine. PlayStation still obviously, or Sony or Microsoft or Nintendo or whomever is making a game, obviously still wants to retain the edge given to them by holding this property hostage. So at a certain point when it becomes inconvenient for them, like if nobody's buying that title anymore, sure, they can port it out to PC so that it can be preserved there, because games do tend to live forever on PC. But we're seeing an increasing trend of games, and Nintendo's one of the worst offenders of this, of games being saved so that they can be sold back to you later in a different format but under their same platform. And I think that we're going to continue to see more of this. So you're going to see more iconic games locked to brands, because again, that locks you onto the platform, and that's not necessarily great. That's where it kind of takes more of an anti-consumerist turn, and I'm not real happy about that. But it is their product, and they have the right to do with it as they want, and that's important to note, because if you take that away, then you take away the motivation for them to keep making these types of games in the future, which is not something any of us want. Nobody wants to live in a world of all third-party games, because we'd lose some of the best games possible. So it's really a thin line. So if they can keep a game long enough to make it, you know, even if they want to do it by generation, like sure, like let's put all last generation's PlayStation games up on PC, or we could remaster them and sell them on PlayStation 5. What do you guys think is going to happen? Because I'm going to tell you, I think it's the latter. Sure, I'd like it to be the former, but I'm pretty sure it's going to be the fucking latter.
Yeah, of course they're going to put it on their platform. You know, so that's the thing I was thinking about this question. If this sort of stuff would happen, which I don't think it would, it would have to be like many decades later, perhaps. You know, like if the Sony PlayStation brand doesn't exist anymore, then they may throw their classics on PC or something. But if there's still a PlayStation system out there, there's no way they're going to be throwing them on PC. No way in hell, you know?
I mean, look at Nintendo. Nintendo's probably, yeah, while they do
Nintendo, yeah,
while they do weird things, they're probably a good blueprint in that they have all of this stuff, these old games, even for Super Nintendo, that we all want to play. There's no way in fuck they would put that on computer or allow that onto another system. Yeah. And I think that some of the classic PlayStation games and some of the classic Xbox games, you know, even the original Halo, 30 years from now, you'd be like, oh man, I played Halo growing up. I want my kids to be able to play some Halo, you know, the classic Halo experience. They're going to want that locked to their brand if they are still have a brand.
Hey, man, have the Xbox Mini in 30 years, you know?
You, man, it's a real thing. Like, raising probably your will. Kids, you know, that's why you see movies being rebooted 20 to 25 years after they were made, because essentially the people that were fans of those movies can now share them with their kids in theory. So
I watched Back to the Future 1 and 2 today with my 5-year-old daughter.
There you go. Day.
Oh, nice.
That's awesome.
That's about the age we kind of saw them too, right?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
All right. You know, anybody else want to chime in on this real quick? All right. I think we said enough. So we'll move on to his next question. Do you think that using SCUF controllers in competitive games like Overwatch is cheating? In case you don't know, SCUF controllers add paddles to the backside of the controllers, which act as your jump and crouch button in most FPS games. Thank you for clarifying, because I was like, what the fuck is a scuff
controller? Yeah, I didn't know what that
was. Isn't that on the Elite? Isn't that stuff that's on the Elite?
No fucking idea, but here's my take on it.
Yeah, it is.
In a the Elite has it. In a competitive setting, right? I'm talking about MLG type shit. Everybody should have them. If one guy's going to have them, everybody should have them. However, if you're just home, you know, and the other guy on the other side of the computer, you know, or the internet, or whatever, is using them, you can't exactly tell him no, because, you know, he has the right to do whatever the fuck he wants.
Yeah.
But the question is it considered cheating? That's a tough one. I don't really know.
I don't think so, because look, you go watch Evo or the KI Cup or anything. Some people use the Xbox controllers or a standard, right? They use it as their fighting stick. Yeah. And some guys come in with X-Arcade fucking custom fighting sticks, right? Yeah. So is the guy with the X-Arcade cheating? I don't think so. That's how you play.
That's a good question. It's like, hold on, Carlos, just real quick. You're right about that. So if MLG is okay with this type of stuff, then technically it's okay, I guess. Anyway, Carlos, go ahead.
Okay, wait. Let me take y'all back.
Carlos, go first, then you go next.
Yeah, this is just a quick addition at Chris's point. Like, there's this dude that won the Street Fighter 4 Evo with the fucking PS1 controller.
I remember that. You know, was he cheating? He was at a disadvantage, exactly, if you think about it. You know?
Right, yeah.
So how did you feel when your buddy came over with a turbo controller for Street Fighter?
Yes, and I'm glad you bring this up, because that's the other point. It's like, okay.
Turbo bind. Okay,
like Chris brought up a good point why it's not cheating, but at the same time, how did you feel? Manny, remember fucking Evil Chris, the son of a bitch?
With that his fucking controller, you could program moves in it. Like, in other words, I mean, to be, you know, okay, we're talking, okay, yes, extra buttons and all this stuff, but you know what? What things don't have? They don't have rapid fire.
Yeah, they don't have that. Yeah. So, and you hit it on the head. Okay, if you have, like, paddles on the back of the controller to help you jump, I don't consider that cheating. Now, if you have paddles in the back that help you aim and shit, then it's fucking cheating, you know? Because this asshole would come with all this shit, turbo, and then his excuse was, oh, I bought the controller, so I could use it how I want. It's like, no, motherfucker, you're missing
the point. There's a reason why the fucking Demon Raid is so goddamn hard to do.
Yeah, but he did it in one button.
That motherfucker just dropped that shit out like nothing.
Yeah. You know, like remember when he broke his arm, he had to use an arcade stick and stuff. We're like, okay, whatever, that's fine, you know. But then he went into these other crazy ass controllers. So yeah, so Brett, just jump in on that, you know, because I'm with you on that turbo shit. That's fucking cheating.
My question is about button layout, and there are certain games in which, like, it is damn near impossible to hit two buttons at the same time. So if it's mapped out differently, that with these extra buttons put on the back paddles, that you're, you know, able to you know, go from like a jump into a crouch directly, so that you can leap up and then drop down into a crouch to about, you know, it really depends on the button layout and how the moves lay into each other. So I can see situations where having extra buttons like on the back might be an unfair advantage if everybody didn't have it. I kind of share your opinion that in a competitive environment, nobody gets any handicaps, or everybody gets all the handicaps. It's supposed to be an equal playing field. And that is one of the things that I find especially so appealing about console gaming, and why this bothers me so much, is that on PC, you can have whatever the fuck you want. You want a mouse with 34 buttons? You can have a mouse with 34 buttons. But for the most part, console gaming is a level playing field in a competitive environment. That's one of the things that actually draws me to it. So I would hate to see, you know, all kinds of, you know, this become the standard. Although, you know, when you're at home gaming, I can't really give anybody shit if they're using a crazy wireless, you know, controller, whatever's more comfortable for you. But, if I was playing next to somebody that had, like, you know, four extra buttons on their controller that I didn't have, and, you know, I was continually losing to them, I'd get a little miffed.
Yeah. I like this question. It's a good one. Anybody else want to jump in on it? Take that as a no. So we'll move on. He also had a comment too. This is about video reviews, because he was asking us if we were interested in doing video reviews for the site. We pretty much said and it's not that we don't want to do them, it's just we don't exactly have the time, right? So he says, as far as the video reviews go, I feel like you guys should at least give it a shot. You could do like a 5-minute long first impressions video to start off. And when it picks up steam, you could start the big 10-minute ones with more detail in the video. The way Brett talked about Zelda was awesome, and it completely sold me on the game. I would love to see him do more stuff like that, as well as everybody else. I was just asking because I thought it would be easy as doing a Tony's take on it. You know, just some background gameplay and a voiceover. Thanks for answering. Okay, so because we were coming at it from like, yo, we want to do a high budget type of thing,
like an ACG type of.
Yeah, so he's thinking more of a more stripped out thing. We just talk about the game. That's viable. And we're, again, like we said last time, we're not completely ruling it out. But this year, we're probably not going to do it. We already introduced two new things to the channel. I don't want to go too crazy with that. But it's possible we may do that. We'll talk amongst ourselves. You know, we'll see what we could do. Because, yeah, I mean, like, it wouldn't be too hard to get one of us on in front of a mic, just talk about the game for 5-10 minutes, throw some fucking gameplay over it, and call it a day. If that's what you guys would like, sure. But again, not this year, because we already have two new things, so we want to roll it out slowly. But yeah, you know, maybe we'll do it. You know, not gonna rule it out.
Let me ask you guys this, because you know, I think we're mildly considering some of this stuff, and yeah, it would be a slow rollout, and obviously we'd have a lot of legwork to do on it. So let me use the platform to ask you guys this: would you be interested in seeing more reviews or more video editorials? Because it seems a lot of our viewers like the loose and fast feel of our shows, and just bond the shoot from the hip honesty that we generally have. You know, I don't imagine want a whole lot of polish. So that seems like it would more fall in like a video editorial, you know, or an impressions kind of thing than an actual rigid review. And would you guys want to see that as one person, or would you like to see two people back and forth? Like, what kind of format? Just out of curiosity, like, throw us some suggestions. We'll see. We'll throw it all at the wall. See what sticks.
Yeah, there you go. People answer the man, you know. How, if we do video reviews, we're not going to do standard reviews. That's just a fact. We're not like that. That's not Throwdown. So how would you like us to do it? Give us some suggestions, you know. All right, and then the last question here for Mr. Sodep 1, very interesting question too. What would be your reaction if Xbox ever went away?
That would be disappointing.
Yeah, that'd we don't want that. Nobody wants.
Then that would mean there was there would be that such a big gap between them, because I mean, if Xbox was gone, then you'd have Nintendo, who doesn't officially like to compete.
Yeah,
so you'll have this kind of over. You know, you'll have the what is considered the big boy console, and then you have the baby console. I feel like it's a big enough market that there can be more than just two.
Yeah, here's the thing. Yeah, go ahead, Adam.
If people were complaining about like the difference between a console and a PC, now they're complaining even more then, because then it's like, well, we got PlayStation and PC. That's all you got,
right? And then here's the thing. I know there's some stupid fanboys that actually do want Xbox to go away, but that wouldn't be good. Like, I know the Xbox One isn't exactly real competition for the PlayStation 4, but it still is competition, and it still keeps Sony kind of on their toes, because they could easily, if they lapse, we're going to get Sony from the PS2 era. We don't want that shit. You know?
Mind you, we lived in a world that didn't have any sort of, we didn't live in a world. We did outlive in a world where there was no other competition.
No, there's always been competition. There's
always been somebody.
You need competition.
Well, I mean, there was a point.
Nintendo ain't fucking competition for Sony. Let's just be honest. You know?
Yeah, unless Nintendo decides to step up to the plate and actually put out something that's really that can really compete on the level of a Nintendo. I mean, of a PlayStation.
I don't think they're going to come out with a legit heavy hitting console.
They're not.
They will not. They will not. They won't. They see themselves as the family car. They see that, you know, it's an affordable family car. That works, you know, it does the things that you want it to do. It gets you to work. It brings the kids. You can bring them to soccer. That's what that is. So yeah. They're never going to be the only time that they actually effectively decided to say, okay, we're going to fucking drop a brick on these people is Super Nintendo era. Well, you know, maybe even Nintendo 64, but even Nintendo 64 was pretty. Yeah.
Well, Nintendo 64 was, you know, yeah, it was shit, but it was still powerful. you know. Yeah. And the GameCube was pretty nice too. It was more powerful than PS2, you know.
But yes, but then we're talking about a console that was like three years older than the other one.
Yeah. GameCube was the last time Nintendo actually released like a powerful system. Then they decided, hey, let's just remake the GameCube again with the Wii and Wii U.
Yeah, let's just keep using that tech. We love it so much.
Fucking crazy. Yeah. Xbox shouldn't go away. That's stupid.
No, that would be a dark day.
You know?
Though I would like to see, you know, here's the thing. Okay, if Xbox does go away, I would like to see the sort of vigor that the console side of Xbox was on the PC. Like, they're literally trying to push these amazing games on there. Because if you remember, PC gaming, especially with Windows gaming, with, you know, like the original games that came from Windows and Windows and Microsoft gaming, those games were shit. So, I mean, to be honest, it's like once, you know, Microsoft stepped into the console generation, it was like, okay, now we're actually making fucking games.
Yeah, instead of bullshit games. That's awesome. All right. We don't really have any outro stuff, so we're going to end the show. I feel like I got to say something, but totally forgot. We are going to be celebrating our third year soon, so that's going to be cool. I don't know if we're going to do anything special. We'll figure that out.
I mean, yeah, this is the third year of this iteration of
Frodo. Yes, yeah, in like 3 weeks, you know, so that'll be interesting.
What is it in old Throwdown numbers?
Fuck, I don't even know. What is this? 145 plus 91. Somebody do math, because I don't know. You know? All right, man, so let's wrap it up. So thank you for watching and listening. Leave us your questions in the comment section of this episode here on YouTube or over on the Coalition. We'll answer them on next week's show, man. Subscribe to Throwdown on SoundCloud, which is still alive, iTunes, and YouTube. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Throwdown Show, man. Links are located in the description below. Once again, our show is Tony Polanco. And tonight I was joined by Emilio Lopez.
Hi, it's good to see you guys. I forgot,
Manny, yeah. The stream, man, the stream.
Yes, I did. I did my first official stream on our Throwdown channel earlier in the day, probably midday. And I got to, you actually got to see me ram my head against the wall 3 times and then finally beat the secret boss from Nier, which is great. So, I hope to have some more stuff here. That'll make 2 people that have actually done streams on our Throwdown channel. Come on, guys, get in there.
Motherfuckers. I'm looking
get in there, guys. You know,
I don't play a steady time. Like you see me playing, but you think you see me playing because really I'm stepping away to do other shit and I'm coming back and forth. So I'm never really sitting here besides doing this show.
I say if you guys are, you know, somebody's doing a Dark Souls run and somebody's doing a Dark Souls run.
I'm sure this. You want to show how we throw down on Dark Souls sometime?
Yeah, sure.
You know, you do some of those. You know,
you guys can laugh at the poor sons of bitches that invade us.
You know, yeah. The it's like if somebody wants to do Dark Souls, there's only 2 guys here. I play Dark Souls. Come on, man.
Oh, dude, when
I play a Souls ish game called Bloodborne.
Yes. We'll get more of the fellas in here, man. You know, don't worry about that, especially Absolver.
Ryan, you can put on some robots, some future robot game.
Robots.
I can't remember the game now.
Warframe.
Yeah, you can put some futuristic robot Warframes on there.
I would love to, but I've like stopped playing Warframe until I finished my PS3 backlog.
Oh shit! What you playing, man?
Beyond Good and Evil still.
Oh shit! There you go.
It's really good. No, it is really good. It's like, after playing like something like modern games, it's just weird how like good this game is. Like, wow, this game needs a sequel. Like, oh, hold on. Like,
it is getting a sequel.
Why did it come out like now? What the fuck?
It's getting a sequel, but it's getting a weird sequel. Let's throw F-bombs everywhere.
It should be done a lot sooner than this. It's like, this game's great. Like, sequel should have been like by number 4 or 5 by now.
Yeah, it's crazy. But anyway, yeah, a little bit of a segue there. So yeah, once again, I was your host, Tony Polanco, and I was joined by Emilio Lopez.
See you later, guys.
Chris Seeley.
Take care, everyone.
Carlos Romero.
Go watch Game of Thrones. Don't get spoiled.
Brett Murdoch.
I'm about to spoil the shit out of Tony Post show.
Man, I will cut you, man. Adam Vale.
New Queen of the Stone Age album out, Villains.
Oh, shit. You know what I'm going to ask you, right, Adam?
They're still around?
They're still around, Brian?
Damn right, they're still around.
What the fuck? And Mr. Brian Manjoma.
Go watch Steins Gate. It's really good.
Hell yeah, man.
Yo, Brian, what'd you think of Shin Godzilla, man?
Oh, that was really good.
Like, yeah, it is.
Wait, you made it sound like it was better than Steins Gate. We got to talk.
We're going to talk, and can you please, like, recommend me, like, some more stuff to watch? Because, like, you guys have not... You, Carlos, have not recommended me anything to watch apart from Hunter x Hunter and Steins Gate.
Hey, Brian, I've never let you down, man. Remember when I recommended Commander to you? I know you love that shit.
Mando, and then Stargate. Stargate's another good one.
Yo, hit me up, you know? Guys. Hit me up on Twitter if you want recommendations on anime.
There you go, man. Hit this man up. All right, man. We'll see y'all on Thursday, man. Peace.
Deuces.
Hey, guys.